We're all here, hopefully, to learn about MySQL 5.5. So who here is using MySQL 5.5? So 5.5 has been around for a while, more than 6 months, yet there are still people who claim that they don't, they haven't heard about it or they haven't used it. And there are many reasons to consider moving to MySQL 5.5, including swapping the battery around so that it's the right way, probably my mental note to not discharge my, empty my last battery, so that I'm still going the wrong way. Technology for you. Can't see the wood for the trees. Whoa. Whoa. Okay. So we're here to talk about 5.5. And I have two objectives for the evening. One is to give you an understanding of why you should look at 5.5. And two is to talk about how you can start going about the process of upgrading to MySQL 5.5. Who here is not running 5.x? Who's running 4? No one running 4. Oh, I had to audit a system this week. It was running 4.1. Wow. No one's at 5. That's nice. For those of you who don't know me, you know, I do drink alcohol. Much better than water for a presentation. I've been doing databases for a little while. I've been focusing on MySQL since before the dot-com boom. I've sort of written quite a lot. I'm writing some more books at the moment. I'm one of the most traveled speakers now in the Oracle space. I do more presentations to Oracle user groups around the world than anybody else on MySQL, and that keeps me quite busy. It's nice to be invited to places, and I'm going back to South America next month. And you know, if you want to know about me, there's plenty of information. I do consulting for a living. That's my job. So I'm available for consulting. Anybody here who's having performance issues or architectural issues or would like to upgrade to 5.5, you should come and talk to me afterwards. So if you don't know about all of the versions, I'm not going to go into the history of versions, but we're talking about 5.5, which is general availability. MySQL is also MySQL 5.1. The previous GA version is still around. Many people still use 5.0, but that's reached end of life. And in between, there was a little sort of little lost identity between versions, which never made it. And now 5.6 is an active development, and in fact, there have been some initial candidate releases of 5.6 already. But there's a big change coming into 5.1, which we'll talk about a little bit, and then 5.5, and that's the whole purpose of why we're here. Some things I'm going to talk about, some of the features that are new, some of the things that you may or may not know about, different variables and settings and configurations you need to be aware of, some of the exciting things that I've seen in benchmarks or I can talk about with 5.5, and then hopefully an incentive for you to consider to moving to migrating. You know, as with every product, there's a big list of things that you can talk about that are new features, and there are things that are new features that you don't really want to talk about, like I actually didn't have Windows improvements on the list, but you know, okay, I need to say that there are improvements even though I wouldn't promote using Windows. But the biggest things are around scalability. Certainly working with larger core systems, as the case was, MySQL just really didn't scale over about 8 cores, and it scales much better now. A lot of lock contention that was removed in doing those things, particularly within the InnoDB pluggable storage engine. In MySQL 5.1, if you're using 5.1 now, you may or may not realize, but there are actually two different versions of InnoDB. There's the built-in version and there's the plug-in version. And even though the plug-in version is included with the product, it's not enabled. And people think that it's enabled, or people might switch to using it and then don't enable the right settings, and it's not actually enabled. So I'm not going to talk about that, but in MySQL 5.5, the plug-in version is now the default version, so we've removed this sort of complexity that you may or may not be aware of, and I'll detail some of those things. Finally, we have some basic functionality improvements in stored procedures, but again, triggers and stored procedures really haven't had any development improvements since 5.0, so it's still quite in its infancy. Japanese 4-byte characters, Klingon, and a few other character sets that need 4 bytes now get true support. And as I mentioned, there are lots of talks about improvements on Windows. One of the new features is performance schema. And I'm not going to spend any time talking about this because the average person in this room, you will never use performance schema. but there is a low-level instrumentation which can be very good for diagnosing high concurrency problems, enabling you to effectively trace inside MySQL of what's going on. So you can look at what threads are doing, you can look at contention, you can look at what's happening on the file system, and it can be quite valuable information if you know how to read and interpret it. I say that most of you won't do it because right now there are still over 300 MySQL status variables, and there's a lot of information you can divulge from that before you get to particular points. Unless you have a lot of concurrency and you have a particular problem, it's not something that you'll probably just enable unless you've got nothing else to do with your spare time. But it is actually a major feature and people are using it, and it has actually helped in areas of identifying problems that they didn't know existed in previous versions, but with 5.5 they could go, oh, here's a problem. For example, one was with the query cache, which had a setting that you could apply in 5.0 and 5.1 to remove a lock, and no one actually really knew about it. The performance schema confirmed it. One of the big things in 5.6 is the concept of semi-synchronous replication. Now, MySQL replication is asynchronous, which means that once the statement towards the master database has been committed and is considered durable, depending on the settings that you have in place, control is returned back to the process that called it. Replication is asynchronous. It means it receives the transaction and applies it, but not in the stream in which you were working. So you can have things which is called like lag or ill potential inconsistencies. Semi-synchronous replication, I should actually put semi-synchronous up there. Semi-sync replication means that replication will wait for an acknowledgement from a slave that a transaction has been recorded on the slave. So you're getting a better guarantee of consistency. And there are a lot of settings. This is actually an extension of work that was done by Google many years ago and actually was in one of the early Google patches. And so now it's available in MySQL 5.5 by default. It's not enabled by default. You have to actually enable it, and I have an actual screen about that. But there are a number of variables. These are the variables that come up with replication. So in InnoDB, and I'm going to talk mainly about InnoDB because if you're using a highly transactional system, you should be using InnoDB. Should not be using MyISAM. There are exceptions to that, but the default has always been MyISAM is the default storage engine, now it's InnoDB. That's the way you should always architect the system, using a transactional storage engine, and you should consider MyISAM a non-transactional storage engine for different purposes. Just the benefits in terms of like concurrency, multi-versioning, and automatic recovery are those critical things that you need. There are some new variables in 5.5, and I've highlighted two buffer pool instances and purge threads, which are very exciting. I have some graphs on those. They're ones that are actually available but not enabled in 5.5. File format max is just a thing. Use native IO, for example, is enabled. Stats and metadata, actually, I'm not sure if that's enabled by default. But I want to highlight that if you haven't really used 5.1 or you haven't used the plugin version of 5.1, there's a whole pile more that you can tune in InnoDB that you're not aware of. These are actually in 5.1 MySQL plugin, but these are things that you now have in 5.5, and they will change the way in which you do work. Some of the things include like the IO capacity and the IO threads and the write threads and the read threads. Can change the way in which information is actually written to disk with MySQL and InnoDB. You can now utilize better throughput with faster hardware. Historically, there was a lovely hard-coded value, which limited basically the operations that would happen per second in the background threads. And so you can change that now, you can add more threads, so you can get more throughput in terms of your disk I/O. You know, there's a few other ones like strict mode, which gives you better data integrity, like SQL mode. But there's quite a lot in there. There are a couple of other variables. There's some locale information. There's some proxy user things. I haven't come across any information or anybody really looking at those things right now. I mentioned before that the status variables is a way for you to work out what's happening inside MySQL. So there are some new status variables. As you can see, they sort of relate to basically the new features. Signal, resignal, by commands executed, semi-synchronous replication,
There is a
What happened in 5.5, and this is important because this is a migration issue, is MySQL introduced a few new reserved words. And it's something you need to be aware of because part of upgrading, this is what can actually break the software. There's only like 7 of them, but it's important to know that they do exist. One of the new things in 5.5, which is enabled by default, is that InnoDB changes the way in which it writes to disk. Uses an underlying libAIO module, which you may or may not have installed on your system. So, you know, you could just slap down 5.5 and put it on an existing system you may have. This could be one of those dependencies that you need to actually install as an addition because something was required. You can actually also disable it, but it's recommended that you do use it because it's actually giving you better disk throughput. And one of the benchmarks there actually talks about backup recovery, the recovery process, the automatic recovery process, being a lot faster because of using this. So what are the issues with using 5.5? Oh, yes, any quick Gustavo, right?
Yeah,
so, sure, fire away.
Sure, okay, so
the status variables are variables that tell you what's happening internally in the system. And you can use a thing like show global status, which will actually show you a value of all those things. You can also use show session, so they're the ones just for your session. For MySQL 5.1, there's an information schema table, so you can actually go select star from information schema.global status, for example, and you can do qualifiers on those things. And so they're internal counters. And then there's also MySQL admin, which is a command line tool which you can use to gather information. And it actually has a very cool filter where you can go, I want to run it recursively, or not recursively, iteratively, with the time frame, and I want you to compare the differences. So you can actually say, run it every second and show me the differences, and it only shows you what's changed every second. And so it can actually be handy, just if you're just jump on a system and you've got nothing there, you can see what's going on right now, it can actually be beneficial in that perspective. But there's a lot of variables, we're not going to go through them tonight, but it can really help in diagnosing systems. Everyone still awake? Everyone need a beer? Pizza? Back massage? Yeah, okay. Kind of hoping. If we could find a sponsor for someone who does back massages, very happy to get them put in. I can give them a slide, not a problem. I can even hand out cards. So what are some of the issues if you want to come to 5.5? This is my biggest issue, and I have this discussion slash argument with the Oracle team. I'm actually recognized in Oracle as an ACE director, so there's less than 100 of us worldwide across their 2,000 products that are specialists in their preferred areas. There's a few of us in MySQL. And so we get, you know, a chance to communicate with people otherwise you wouldn't be able to do, or get information before you're going to get it, or have discussions of things that, you know, the public don't know about. And one of the things I've been ranting about for a while, including this week, was why doesn't it exist in a repository? Why can't I just go yum install or have an RPM, which is available on the website, accessible? Or why isn't it available in Ubuntu? 5.5.9 was sort of in a beta test in Ubuntu months ago, and it's now they're trying 5.5.12. Depending on how you install your software, this can be a major impact. So if, for example, you use the binary, the tar binary, that's fine. But if you require, like, you know, installing via RPMs, then you could actually download those, but then you need your own repository. Or if you use Ubuntu and you want to do apt-get, you can't actually do that. There's no package for that. So those things can be troublesome. Now, you can package your own, but that's also a lot of work. So this is a barrier to entry for someone who just wants to try it in an existing infrastructure. Now, I'm a database person, so I'm an advocate for, like, installing the binary because then you have more flexibility over it. But a lot of people don't do that because they have system administrators who are focused on making sure that they can have consistency in their software, they can upgrade, they can downgrade, they want to rely on a particular package manager. No. We're working on it, which is actually a better answer than normal because normally you can't even get an answer. but it's still an issue. You know, I actually have an email dialogue with the person who's doing the stuff at Ubuntu. I know the guys at OTN who have their own public GitHub repository. I'm going, can you put it up there? You know, it's already there. No luck. If I know something, I'll let you know. But even a thread this week where I actually like ranted about this again didn't sort of fall on deaf ears. I thought I had another slide in there, but I obviously don't. I guess I'll come to something else in a minute. So the reasons for considering MySQL 5.5, you know, there's lots of things to look at, but you need if you need a compelling reason, these are some of the things where I go, this is why I would recommend people look at this. If you're using MySQL, look at considering upgrading, or if you're considering it. I have a customer who's about to go live in the next few weeks, and they're running 5.1. I go, why aren't you running 5.5? There's no reason not to run 5.5 if you want in production. I've mentioned it. You know, now InnoDB is better. The plugin version, which was actually developed independently due to some ownership problems when Oracle bought the company that ran InnoDB, and so there wasn't a lot of love there, and now it's all under the same family. Everyone's happy again. It's better introduced and better intertwined. The significant differences are they're spending a lot of work in reducing what's called mutexes, or lock contention, where the system internally has to have exclusivity on some information. And I haven't bothered creating a slide because it's quite technical, but a lot of work has been done in reducing these issues. What that means to you is that if you run in a system where you're getting a lot of concurrency, you're getting a lot of throughput, you're probably hitting some particular limits that you may or may not even know that you're getting. And I've had a customer earlier this year where I saw particular indicators of thread contention, and it was like, okay, what do we do here? And they're actually running in 5.0. And I said, okay, one of the solutions is to upgrade the software. And you know, at that point in time, it was 5.1 or 5.5, and I said, I reckon you should go to 5.5. And recommending something and a customer actually doing it are two different things. And this customer actually said, yes, we want to do that. And they went through and doing it. And with doing no other tuning other than upgrading the software, all their problems went away. That's not always going to be the case, but in their particular case or the particular thread problems they were having, I thought this would actually just solve their problem and they would be happy just by doing an upgrade. A few extra tuning things on the side to make them even more happy. But it was as simple as that. Hardware now is getting better and better. I mean, I was on a system that had 48 cores. It's kind of crazy. It's no longer like dual CPU quad-core machines. There's like hex core things out there. So MySQL is running better with more cores and more threads. Another new feature is that also from 5.1, the plugin version, which is now in 5.5, is you can actually add and create an index, or drop an index, without that blocking the table. So if you have tables that are like 100, 200 gigabytes in size, you can actually add an index without impact. Now, I haven't actually gone into actually physically doing this, although I'm working with somebody else right now who we need to do this, and one system's in 5.5, and so I'm actually going to get some benchmarks on it. But it is actually a feature that they define that they actually have this fast index creation process. Only in InnoDB. If you want to add that index to my ISAM, you still have the same problems. If you do nothing else but to go from 5.1, where that's plugged into 5.5, what happens is, just in terms of throughput, InnoDB gives you about 10% improvement at the peak, and then it actually gets better. So just here, you know, we're in 5.1, also it's even 5.1, it's even better than 5.0, you know, at 32 connections, just simply going to 5.5, there was a 10% improvement without any other tuning. So immediately, if you're getting a system now where you've got that throughput, you're going to get a benefit by doing nothing other than just installing a new version. So one of the reasons to go there. And as you can see, it gets better over time. So the next thing is the buffer pool is something that stores your data and your indexes from the actual individual InnoDB data files. There's a relationship that's stored in a buffer pool. What they've introduced is a way to break that buffer pool up. You have systems now where you've got 64 gig of RAM, 128 gig of RAM. 128 is about my limit, but I have other friends who are consultants, and they have systems that have 300 gig of RAM. And so they're getting insane types of numbers. The things that I'm working at now, you know, 32, 48, 64, we're doing some benchmarking on a high performance system of 48 gigs. By breaking up the buffer pool, by just setting this setting, that's all. You have nothing else to do, you just enable this setting, which is not enabled by default. And Dimitri ran a test, and in his benchmarks, there was a 50% increase in throughput. I have a customer right now that was doing some work last year in 5.1 and 5.5, and there's been some other changes, and we don't have exact comparisons. But we're doing the throughput of 9 or 10,000 transactions per second on each one of their servers. And there was much better throughput. And it's not an exact comparison, but one of the things we changed was going to 5.5. And this actually improves the ability to read and write data from the buffer pool without contention. So you can just upgrade to 5.5, you get a little bit of a boost. You can enable this in a, again, you need to be a high throughput environment. If you're doing work like in a data warehouse, you're doing like, you know, millions of SQL statements sequentially, then this is probably not going to give you that boost that you might wish for. But in most online applications that you have, there was some people doing like trading and marketing and those sort of things. This is automatically going to give you a boost. Everyone's still awake? In MySQL 5.0, there were several background threads that would do work, but there was one primary thread that would do work and also handle things which was called purging, which was sort of like deletes, but also removals of data pages. And Harrison Fisk, who was a MySQL Inc., the software product person and colleague for many years, who now works for Facebook, said recently, he said, in 5.0, we had a dedicated purge thread. And he was joking because the thread that was supposed to be doing all the work was always purging. And so the system couldn't actually do any work. It was always trying to delete things. In 5.5, they've actually introduced a dedicated thread. And this is not enabled by default, but there's no reason why you shouldn't enable it. Right now, you can specify one for the MySQL version. You can specify a bigger number with the code. But what this means is that if you're doing a lot of work that involves a lot of deleting of internal pages inside the buffer pool or a lot of deletes, then the system is going to get better at managing these things. And I haven't found the best graph to find this on, again, one of the Mitch's graphs, but a lot of these problems that you're seeing here in throughput, these significant drops, are related to checkpointing. And that is InnoDB having to stop doing work and flush change data to disk. And this is also reflected by a thing called how big your checkpoint age is based on the size of your log files. And by enabling the purge thread, what you do is you're actually eliminating all of these sort of inconsistencies. So you're actually getting more consistent throughput. And also internally, in terms of the way that IDB log files are working, it's far more performant. So you might not sort of understand specifically what that is, but this is something that you can enable. It's there for free, so you should put it on. Particularly doing a lot of writing. I have customers that do 300, 400, 500 meg a minute, okay, of log file writing. So it's quite excessive. The other thing to consider is that MySQL has gone backwards and forwards about setting a variable called IDB thread concurrency. And there was this sort of rule to say the number should be 2 times the number of cores, but that's really, you know, not exactly right. It depends on what your cases are. In 5.5, what they do is they've changed the default back to 0, which means let InnoDB make a decision. So if you upgrade from 5.1 to 5.5, you may go, I'm just going to leave that thing the way it was in 5.1, but that might actually be detrimental to your system. So you should actually turn it off and let the default make a decision about what's going to happen in your system. Now, the best way to tune this is actually really complicated. Leave it at 0 until it doesn't work, then you have to change it. You may think that's funny, but that's actually the way to tune it. Until you have a problem, let InnoDB work out its threads. When it manifests into certain problems, yes, Hank?
Is that the same for my ISAM?
My ISAM, in which particular?
Right.
No, okay, so here's another fallacy. There's another variable called thread concurrency, and practically every customer I go to sets this to some magical number, and they think it's going to do any good, but it only works on Solaris. And I just go, hey, look, you know, it does work on Solaris. And here's the link to the manual, just in case. So there is no, to answer your, it's a good question actually, because one of the things I love, and we're not talking about it tonight, but it helps to bring in some wisdom that I have from all my years of experience to share with people. One of the biggest fallacies, and I'm actually doing it in some of the writings I'm doing right now, is people will set a value based on something that they've read rather than something that they've done. Okay? When I talk to people, the number one thing that I tell people about is backup and recovery, because when your system crashes, you know, you just go to the business. The number two thing is monitoring and instrumentation. If you're not monitoring what your system's doing, how do you know when you make a change whether it makes the system better or worse? People will change something because Google said, you know, you should change this value, and they think it makes a difference, but they don't have any empirical evidence. The best advice I can give you is you should definitely instrument what you're doing with SO status variables and other monitoring, so that if you make a change, you can see what the impact of the system is. This is so critical when it comes to things that use memory. People love to change the four thread buffers, join, sort, read, and rebrand, and they change these numbers and they make them crazy. You know, they go, oh, I want to do a 10 meg or 100 meg. What they realize is that's a buffer per thread every time you get it, and for most of them, it will allocate the whole thing. And generally, if you go above the default of like 256K, it's not going to give you any benefit. You're just wasting memory, and you're wasting the time to create the memory. So, and when I see those things, I go, well, what was the motivation of changing it? Oh, whatever. Well, let's just change it back to the defaults and see if things get worse. Unless you're doing very specific things, unless you know what those things are, then changing the buffers don't make any difference. There are some exceptions. You know, like the read-rand buffer, for example, is only good if you're doing huge sets of data when you're ordering the data by an order, which is not the primary key order, and so it will optimize the way in which it reads it. Otherwise, it's a waste. And there are different rules for each of them. So thread concurrency is quite a funny one. I need to do thread concurrency is another one where, in this case, do set it back to default and monitor appropriately before you need to consider changing it. Now, what are those conditions? That's an entire talk on its own, and that's, you know, something I do via consulting. So hire me when you have that problem. I mentioned earlier some of the new things. These are actually part of the plugin, which were in 5.1 if you used it, but now is INADB can change the way in which it's doing work in terms of reading and writing data with dedicated threads, or the internal capacity counter that it uses for how much throughput it can manage. Combine this with the native I.O., it gives you much more flexibility over what you can work with. What I don't have in here, and I will mention it because it came up with a customer on Tuesday. What's today? It's Friday. I think it was Tuesday, Monday, I can't remember. Life goes so fast sometimes. You have these settings, and what they did was they also changed the dirty pages percentage, because they're trying to like make the system think that it wants to flush data faster. Data is data that's sitting in memory that needs to go to disk. So the way INADB works is if you make a change to data, like you insert, update, or delete data, it first reads the page of disk if it needs to, and put it in memory, makes a change to the page, and then writes to the INADB log files to change, writes it to disk. It doesn't write the data to disk. Data sits in memory. Data is then flushed to disk in a background process. And these things affect the way in which you would flush things.
Okay, so when you make a query while that is happening, it would make a query to the in-memory buffer?
Yes.
Okay, so what if you did want to keep that stuff more in memory for a lot of periods of time then it would be...
Well, there's lots of things. I mean, the thing is that you want to... There are two things. One... No, it may still be in memory, but what happens is that a page is marked as dirty, which means you want to flush it to disk, because if the system crashes, it's going to go through the INADB transaction log to replay everything. And when you keep the disk versions of the data up to date, it's much better for recovery. The other thing is that there's two log files, two log files I'm talking about, is a finite length. And once you fill that log file up, you have to clear pages, otherwise your system cannot support continuing to work and won't recover. And that's when you flush pages aggressively, that's called a checkpoint. And that's something that causes you to be very aggressive. Now, a setting I didn't put in here, but what I showed this week was, there's another setting called the max dirty pages percentage, which is how many pages are dirty that need to be flushed in the flush list that should be above that before we start aggressively flushing. The default of that is 90. 5.5, it changed to a default of 75. This customer set it to 10. So, you know, why are you doing that? You know, because it's like it's well outside the bounds of what it should be. Combined with the fact that they were thinking like they're having this contention problem, their log files were way too small. So they needed to increase the size of their log files by an order of 10 to allow more work to happen and let InnoDB automatically flush pages when it was comfortable with a variety of things of when should I flush, how many red threads should I use flushing. Well, internally, it's going to flush.
If it internally flushes to this,
you could actually do flush.
How does that advance me? In other words, if I have to do a recovery from the log files,
sure.
Right? You know, the recovery starts at a certain time and you can go step by step to the present. Right?
Yes.
If I flush pages to memory, how does that help me? In other words, how does it advance time from which I have to start recovering?
So you can use the InnoDB show status command. What it'll do is it'll show you what's called the LSN, the log sequence number, which is a pointer between what's in the log file versus what's being flushed to disk in data. So the transaction logs are sequential, and so it knows a pointer as to what's the version of the data that matches with the transactions. And so basically internally inside there are two magic pointers. There's what data is actually on disk and where am I in the log files. And once those pointers start to, and the log files are circular, and once it starts to get back to the start, it'll go...
I don't see that. Because, for example, I have a certain quality that I want to point. Suppose I make two changes to two updates to a certain table.
Sure.
One update occurs at a certain time, the other update occurs later, right?
Sure.
Now I flush to flush that page, right? Where should I go? Should I go to the first update, the second update?
What do you mean, where should you go? Well, the recovery process internally will know what to do. Let's take that offline for afterwards, and we can have a talk about it, and I can give you some of the specifics in terms of internally how MySQL manages data with the log files. So combined with this slide, I would also add in here two more things to consider. One, the flush dirty pages percentage, which has decreased in size, but you shouldn't change. And then the log file size is another one of these magic variables. It's all to do... There are several things to worry about the database. One is just simply throughput. And throughput could be how much data you can put in memory, or how fast can you write it to disk, or how fast can you read it from disk. But it's also about consistency. You know, what you don't understand from this graph, if you don't know how it works, is, okay, we're doing in this particular case 20,000 transactions, whatever that is, and we're working along, but then all of a sudden we drop to 10 or 8,000 transactions. Now, if that's per second or per minute, let's say, it's a interval of time. This is highly inconsistent. You know, that's a spike in the amount of work that has to happen. Where now we have a consistent number of transactions, we don't see these spikes and these drops. So just being able to do throughput, just being able to do something within a certain time frame, being able to measure the average is not enough. You have to know how to first identify those outliers and ways to actually even things out. And again, you know, there's a lot more detail we can go into, but some of these settings are just about making the system more performant overall. And I could actually go back to Sergey's, and we should put some numbers at the end here to see that it actually ends up being as good, if not better. I mentioned historically, people that there's this fine line between how much data is in memory and how big your log files are. The larger your log files are means that you can do more work before flushing or checkpointing, other things happen. However, the larger the log files, the longer it takes to recover your system. And people might go, okay, well, is that a big deal? Well, I went through a recovery last year with a customer who didn't think they needed to do a recovery, and I just crashed their database. And it took 67 minutes to do an automatic recovery because their log files were too large. In 5.5, recovery time due to a couple of fixes, particularly with rollbacks and roll forwards, has been significantly improved. So you can afford to increase these things. If you've decreased them for a reason, now all of a sudden you can go back to potentially increasing the size of them up to a total of 4 gig. Unfortunately, that's a problem, because if you actually want to do more than 4 gig, MySQL still limits that. Anyone here use InnoDB, ExtraDB backup, hot backup? Oh, cool. How big does the log file get when InnoDB hot backup takes a copy of the data and keeps all the log files, all the transactions for the duration of it, and then replays them all in its own version to keep a consistent copy? And the reason why Pocona had to change this to above 4 gig is in a system that can actually, the log files can actually grow past 4 gig internally. And as I mentioned before, as with a customer, they're writing 500 meg per minute of transaction log files, and they wanted to use InnoDB extra backup, and I said, how long does that take? Because they hadn't considered that they're going to run out of this space.
When you hit the log file limit, what happens?
The system will automatically, InnoDB will create this implied thing called a checkpoint, and it will do aggressive flushing where it will flush all data to disk.
And that's why those dips.
Yes, that's in that graph, that's why those dips are occurring. There's some things that they're the reasons why you should just even by default consider using 5.5. There are a couple of other things which are really nice that have been required for a long time and people don't use them, particularly in the banking and financial industry and some very large customers that waited for several years. There's now an audit plugin interface. It's also an authorization one that I don't have listed here. But this can give you better levels of instrumentation of what's happening in the system. There's also actually an SQL logging interface that uses this that captures all the SQL statements that run in the database. So rather than doing general query log or proxy or TCP dump, you can actually use an actual plugin to capture things. It's you know, very limited in what you do. The average person here is never going to want to do this, but this actually has been a barrier to entry for some large customers, particularly when I was working at MySQL several years ago, and so that's actually a good thing. I mentioned semi-synchronous replication. I haven't actually used this with a customer. There's a trade-off between using this and not using it. One reason for using it is that you're getting a better guarantee that a slave has information, so it's better for your recovery process if you want to fail over. The downside is it's going to slow down your throughput, because now you're waiting for a network hop and to check, and you're waiting for data to be written somewhere else before you actually get an acknowledgement. However, depending on your needs, if you have issues that may require you to recover more than once in a particular disaster, you may find this a benefit. It actually is a plugin, so you have to actually install the plugin on the master and the slave. You have to enable a few settings. And you also have to stop and start the slave to capture. But that's basically all you need to do to enable it. Oh, it's on the master. So you have to, on the master, enable the master. And then you also can specify things like which slave needs to have. There's a whole pile of variables. I've listed a few of them. I think there's about 15 variables in total. But the minimum you need to do is basically say, I want to sync, I want to set a timeout, that's in milliseconds, and on the slave, you enable on the slave or slaves that you want that, hey, I want semi-synchronous replication, but because you're doing it globally, you need to actually tell MySQL to pick up the new settings by stopping and starting. And then that slave or slaves will go into the pool. I haven't done extensive testing, but you can have more than one slave there, and so MySQL will just wait for one of them to acknowledge. What I don't know of, it doesn't tell you which one. I guess if you had a slave which was a master to another slave, then you'd need to do the same thing repeatedly. It's only going to manage within its own tier that needs to do this. Now, the benefit of doing this is that MySQL works on replication, I can pull up another slide, works on a complicated balance between writing data to the binary log, potentially writing it to the transaction log, committing that data, sending it to the slave, writing to the relay log, replaying it. And there is two or three spots where you can have serious data loss in an extreme disaster. They're very rare, they're very small, it only happens if you have a lot of volume, but if you do, they're critical. And so people might go, okay, you know, I'm writing, you know, hundreds of thousands of tweets per second. I don't really care if I lose one or two. That's okay. That's fine. People can live with acceptable loss. Some people can't live with acceptable loss. But more importantly is when things get inconsistent, what happens is there's no way to recover it easily. It requires a human being. Then your data is inconsistent. Then, you know, particularly if you're using it for a backup or a failover, now you have a master that has data that may not exist in the slave. So this can give you a peace of mind to think that you now have a more consistent environment. And if you're using something and you want to fail over and you're not reaching a particular throughput issue, then this is actually a good thing to have enabled. Like with everything, there are different pros and cons of why you would do something. It depends on who's supporting the system, whether you're a system administrator and you just want a better level of guarantee. You know, it can actually be a benefit. I haven't seen this, but they also say that there's apparently another library dependency. I just put a note there because I haven't actually come across that documentation for that. And I don't know what you guys read. Who reads Planet MySQL? No one reads Planet MySQL? A couple of people? I spent 5 years to write the most content for everyone on the planet, and no one reads it. Okay, fine. So there are a few people that you may not know, which are good people to talk about, people to follow, and people that I know. Yoshinori is someone from Japan who used to work in my school consulting team. And he was very big in trying to get the UTF-8 support and the auto plugin, some of those things. And so if you come across his name for some of the presentations he has at my school, they're excellent in terms of technical content. Dimitri out of France is someone from the Sun benchmarking team who publishes a lot of benchmarks and actually can have details. He's a good guy to actually read up on some of the technical details. And I put these names up there because they're not the common names that you would always often see. I just wanted to get you guys to expand your horizons a little bit. The plugin is a significant feature if you haven't used the plugin in 5.1. I can't emphasize that enough. There are lots of things that you can enable that you don't even then have to enable by default, so there's a lot more. There are features in the plugin which you may not want to use, like page compression, which seems like a good idea but doesn't perform. But there are a lot of features, and so that particular manual itself is a dedicated manual, well worth reading. You can look at the obligatory Oracle released product things, but it has some good information and a couple of benchmarks. A lot of the work that actually comes from Dimitri's work that helps you in terms of looking at things. So there's some reference material that can give you some information to read and move forward. So the question is, why would you upgrade? Well, it's the current version. Okay, if nothing else, why would we be using the old version? We are .comers. We are Web 2.0 people. We live on the bleeding edge. Okay, we get software before someone's even written it. So it's the current version, I recommend that you do it. I also recommend you do it because you should always be in a habit of upgrading your software. Too many people have an old version, and it's fine, the old version works, and that's great, and that's fine, but then you buy new hardware, or a new DBA comes on board, or a new tool comes out, and it just doesn't work. So it's a good practice to always upgrade your software. I always recommend to customers that they should have an upgrade policy every 3 months of reviewing their software stack to upgrade, with the intention that every 3 to 6 months they actually do an upgrade. So like every 6 months I would be upgrading MySQL.
So how do they review it? How do they know what's available and what do they have?
How do they know, like you mean?
There are two sets of versions, right? Those that they installed on their systems and those that are available from...
Right. Yes, there's no funky tool that gives you that, which probably someone out there should write that. But you can, yeah, no, there's no tool that exists that does that. But, you know, you should, if you're using like, you know, a package manager like RPM or apt, you should be looking at the versions that you have installed of PHP and MySQL and Apache and even your Linux kernel. And you should be like looking at, you know, your Memcache or whatever else you might be running, Nginx, LibHP. You should know those numbers. And every 3 months, you should just go, what's the current version? I'll go to the website, I'll have a look at the current version. I'll read the release notes, and I'll make a note of it. And then you should, you should assign that time in your development cycle in advance. Every 3 months, I'm going to at least update what's available. That's the minimum you should do, because things will come out. PHP has a particular problem between 5.3.2 and 5.3.3, or this particular bug fix, or something like that. So you should be aware of those things. Upgrading is a complicated thing to do, so it doesn't mean you should upgrade, but you should be aware to know what to upgrade to. And I would recommend that you get into a good habit of doing it, like every one or two of those cycles, like every 6 months, so that you know how to do it. You shouldn't wait 3 years, because the issue then is that when you really wanted to upgrade, you come into more complexities that you know you may not be aware of. People run like the old version of MySQL 5.0.22, and they run it on a machine with 8 cores. Well, you know what? In the 40s and the 60s and the 80s, all those versions had performance improvements. And you're not getting the benefit of any of them. That's just 5.0. Yes, I can relate to the fact that, you know, historically, and even more so 5.1 than 5.0. 5.1 was delayed for years and years and years and years, and then, like, you know, 5.1.12 or whatever, 5.1.14 or 5.1.81 it was, went to production. That was based on we will go to production in, you know, this date, because we just can't wait any longer. Yes. I mean, you're using software that is open source, and it has everything has bugs. I hate to admit it, but everything does. I don't write software with bugs, but everything else has bugs. You all laugh and think that's funny, but the last system I wrote from woe to go was a CRM system for a not-for-profit in Australia that has like 20 or 30 users in the system, and I deployed that, probably like 8 or 10 years ago. And in the 4 or 5 years since when I used it, they're still using it to this day, it crashed twice. Once from a disk fall, once from a power failure. While they have had requests for improvements, there has never been one bug in the system. It's hard to do that, but it is possible. Nowadays, you know, I just release it in the GitHub and someone will find a problem. Yeah, that's okay, that's fine. Release it early. Guy Kawasaki says, don't worry, be crappy. MySQL does have bugs. You hit particular problems. And so, you know, part of those knowing which version to upgrade to means going to the manual, which has revision history, and reading through every point release and seeing what it says. That's something that's important. If your data is important to you, if you're a database administrator, or if you care, you should be aware of those things. It's good practice. And I know I should not use the word practice, because that's sort of an abused word, but it's a good principle that you should apply.
So that list of point upgrades, right?
Yes.
Is it HTML mostly?
Yes.
There's no other way than just go and use your eyes.
Yes. No, there's no...
Read the documents.
Yes. There's no... it's HTML. You can download one HTML file of the whole thing, but yeah, there's no consolidation to go on 5.5, all the things, here's all the fixes and the numbers. It's actually really annoying. And then all sections, they're not consistent between sections. If you want to read replication bugs or partitioning bugs or something else, you actually have to go through each one. So it is cumbersome.
So we have version control systems like Git.
Yes.
And we don't have revision logs that you can run Z on. Like what I'm talking about. Like the
revision logs for the... The documents. You can do diffs on the MySQL software, but you know that's source code. It's not a description. Yeah. No, there's no diffs on the documentation per se. Yeah, reading is a lost art. You know, for those people, you do actually have to read sometimes. Moving right along, because let's get through these. It's Friday night. I don't always do. We've been chopping and changing dates a little bit, depending on various conditions. And I don't want to hold you guys up. I know you're all here to party later. You know, that means goes back to your computers, look at your computer screen till 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay, we're geek guys, but that's our definition of party. You're getting newer hardware. Performance improvements come out, so not a good reason. So here's some of the issues, and I've touched on some of these things. The distro, the management of that is a big deal. The native I.O. library. Reserved words are a problem. You might think they're a problem, but the customer that I talked about that upgraded from 5.0 to 5.5, we did some tests, and some of their queries failed because they were using a reserved word in the column. And now they have to quote it, or back quote it, back tick it. Now, I won't get on my horse and say, don't use reserved words, because you really shouldn't. We just solve that problem. But, you know, sometimes it's unavoidable because they introduce a new reserved word. So therefore, a code change is necessary before the upgrade could occur. Another thing to consider is, if you want all of the features of the plugin and all future features of the plugin, that one of the features is this new thing, a file format called Barracuda. The original one is called Antelope, the new one's called Barracuda. So some of the advanced features inside ONUB has an internal file format change. And one of the requirements is you have to move from using ONUB. The default is put everything in one file, or one or two files with the file path. The different ways to have a table space per table, which is the setting called ONUB file per table. And you just can't enable that, and the system will work. Technically, the system will work, but the tables aren't automatically converted. The only way to go from not file per table to file per table is to drop all of your data, change the setting, and reload all your data, which is really kind of nasty. But just be aware that if you want to upgrade and you want to keep moving forward in the future, it's an issue to think about. So the question would be, hey, I just want to upgrade, and I'm not an advocate for it, just suck it and see. However, if you go about the process the right way, you can suck it and see, which basically means stop your database, back up everything, install new binaries and start. It is as simple as that. You should. I wrote this note without double checking. You go from 5.0 to 5.1, you have to run MySQL upgrade. I'm not sure if you have to do it between 5.1 or 5.5, but it's a good thing to do. It's a good habit. And that's basically just MySQL internally, if it uses any like MySQL schema tables or something, keep those consistent. So you should do that. You don't really want to do this, but you can, and it does work. You know, the best way is to, everyone should be running, who here only has one MySQL database? No slaves. How do you do backups? Recovery. Failover. All right. Interesting discussion. Speaking of that, not in the list, but as a gotcha. I take that back. I do have it in the list there. If you're upgrading from 5X to 5.5, and you decide to put two versions of software on the same machine, and people do that, they have two instances, you have to be very careful how you path things. And I've found two bugs now, two particular customers, one of them was this week, where they've installed 5.5, but they've left 5.0 on the machine, and it's in the path, and if you try to run a command, this particular command was MySQL bin log, it wouldn't work. The previous customer was using MySQL dump, and it was actually producing an error, which they weren't looking in their error logs, which is on my blog. So if you put two versions together, make sure you path them, because the command, they were using a 5.0 command talking to a 5.5 database, and it actually was throwing errors. But the best way is, you know, have a slave, upgrade the slave. The benefit of having a slave is that you get all the right throughput, and if you have any SQLs that are producing errors, then the slave will crap. The slave will break. You can simulate reads pretty easily, and that's a very easy way to test your system and verify it. You should definitely monitor and benchmark. That's a whole presentation unto itself, and you can have multiple instances, just be aware of that. Unlike previous versions and the nightmare of going from 4.0 to 4.1 to 5.0 to 5.1 is pretty seamless, and 5.5, even from 5.0 to 5.5, is also reasonably simple. There's no internal changes of file formats of data. So really, the data itself, the most important part is consistent with the software. So it's a matter of just basically upgrading the binaries, and you're good to go. I should caveat that, but just because you upgrade the binaries and you start off again, some settings may not be applicable. If you go from 5.0 to 5.1, there are things that are 5.0 to 5.5, some settings are deprecated. as I've highlighted in this presentation, there are some settings that you should enable, or some things that you did have enabled in early versions that you should now unenable, go back to default. So again, testing will verify all those things. I think there's a slide that says conclusion, and there's nothing behind it, but I can remember, yes, there was. So the conclusion is, what's stopping you from doing it? And that's all I have to say. So, any questions? Cool. Kona has its own performance version, which they do their own patches. They incorporate things from like the Google patch. Not necessarily backport many things. I mean, there are things that come from Google/Pacoda that got into 5.5. The thing is that you've got to choose Pacoda software. You choose the Pacoda version for a reason, and that reason is because you have a particular problem that MySQL can't solve. Is it instrumentation? Is it a particular bottleneck? Because Pacoda is only interested in releasing patches to software to fix a particular customer problem. And they're a great team, and I know them all, and it's good software. The problem is they're only motivated to fixing a particular problem, and they even also openly state that, you know, even if you raise a bug against our own feature, we're not necessarily going to fix it. You know, we're going to ask you to pay for it to be fixed. So Pacoda has certain features which overcome problems. Very good at instrumentation. Very good for certain types of high concurrency issues, which were really more 5.0 and 5.1, and the IDW plugin fixed a lot of those things, and 5.5 is fixing a lot of them. So I don't recommend people start out with Pacoda. It's more a matter of, okay, why are you using, you're using Pacoda because you have like this particular thing, then okay, maybe you should consider that. Or MariaDB finally has actually got something now which is significantly better than either of them with group commit. So you probably chose it more from a 5.0 legacy reason, I'm assuming. So that would have been probably a 5.0 issue, and you'd be running now maybe 5.1 Pacoda server. All those things will be gone now. 5.5 will address all of those things. There are these variances which are very good for certain cases, but the average person, that is 95% of customers, and I mean, I'm dealing with customers that are, you know, Fortune 1000 companies that are doing so many gazillion transactions, it's sort of crazy. Even in those cases, only once have I said, well, we really should consider doing this because they addressed that problem and you don't want to change. 5.5 is really much more robust. The other benefit is that it's actually an Oracle product. And people might go, oh, you know, they don't like that. But Oracle has made a strong commitment. You know, I actually come from an Oracle background. They actually do produce good software. They've really improved the process, which is good in that respect. The MySQL community is very different from the Oracle community. I mean, 11g has been out for a while, and then 11 release 2, and then people don't realize 11 release 2.02 has even more features. But that's been out two and a half years, and people are still running the old version. So Oracle people take a long time to get going. And MySQL, you know, again, Greg mentioned a very good point. GA doesn't necessarily mean it's GA. 5.5 is different, and I'm sure once we get to 5.6, they'll start to turn that around. It is a more stable product. More and more customers are actually using it. I see it. Customers, I see it in RDS now as well, so it's becoming common.
Any new tools around 5.5?
Any new tools?
Like that are specifically new? Like backups or?
Well, you know, from a backup perspective, iNodeB, extra backup, iNodeB hot backup is sort of the biggest thing from the tool perspective. I don't know of anything that really, you know, defines something significantly different. Tools perspective. Can't say.
So
thanks.
The performance schema?
Yes.
Does that hook up into some tools? That's
actually a good point. I'm not too sure whether MySQL Enterprise Monitor is really using that a lot. I know there's another guy called Mark Leaf who did a lot of work on performance schema from the UK. He's got a lot of scripts about it. I don't know of a product, but you know that's somewhere where there could be a product to read that and combine with like IDB mutexes to sort of like help triangulate particular problems. With performance schema, you can turn it on and you can run a few queries, but unless you know what you're looking for, you know, there's not too much to sort of like, not too much excuses to use it unless you really have a particular problem. I didn't mention in here, but I think all the information schema tables, like the InnoDB information schema tables, will stop 5.1, so I don't think there's any new ones there. Performance schema has a whole new schema in place. I mean, there's less new sort of like, you know, wow, you know, new brand new features. It's just generally the thing is it's more robust and it's more scalable, and that's what you need nowadays for, you know, hardware. You know, the days of running the software on like, you know, a single core, a CPU with two cores just doesn't exist anymore. I mean, like, you know, it's hard, you can't even buy a desktop now with less than four cores. So, you know, that's just the way things are. What's that? I got a new toy today. I got an iMac 27-inch, i7, 16 gig of RAM. So, you know, it actually now exceeds my Linux box. Nothing better than running a laptop.
You're talking about this huge number of core systems, but that's people that run their hardware. But
yes.
Virtualizations, you generally wouldn't give all the cores to a single VM.
No.
So you would be running...
Yes. Yeah. So you need to architect your system to support the benefit of virtualization. You know, there are customers that run on Amazon that have 10 instances, 100 instances, that's fine. I have a customer I'm starting work with next week that does everything on VM, and they're just in debt. And, you know, they're talking about numbers, and the first comment was, well, I can't help you. You're running virtualized. The first thing to do is need to move to physical hardware because they're bringing in instrumentation. Someone else, was there Ari or Ariel? No? Okay. Someone actually made a comment on the, said they were coming tonight. And they had the exact numbers which another customer has on doing work on Monday. And they're like recording like 100 million readings a day from instrumentation. And they're trying to put stuff into virtualization. And it's just crazy. Because depending on your needs, you know, a database is a disk intensive operation. If you put another layer in there, then you're slowing down the hardest thing, the thing that takes the most amount of time. And that can be depth for a database. So, you know, you need to make sure that you architect it to support the throughput. But yeah, there are people who still do VM stuff. MySQL's not supported on a VMware, by the way, just FYI. It's also not supported on Ubuntu, FYI. Just physically not supported. So, no questions, wow. Who's going to think about upgrading to 5.5? Who's going to read the release notes? All right, that's the most important thing I want you to do, is go away to go. Reading the release notes and realizing there are new versions is a good habit to have. I know it's boring, but actually it's actually kind of fun reading those things. Just as a sort of like, if you're really sort of like, you know, have death and destruction in mind, it's actually really hard to intentionally crash MySQL. But reading the bugs, you can go, oh, this bug causes MySQL to physically crash. Great, now I have a way to crash the database on purpose. And you might laugh, but you actually, the people who don't test their system to see whether their backup works, never actually do something. You know, I can have a whole pile of discussions about why it's important to have a backup and recovery strategy and why resilience is important. And I can tell you how, you know, like for the customer that's worth $100 million, almost go out of business overnight because their backup strategy didn't work. And their company was sold for $100 million, so I know that's how much it was worth. Those things are important. How do you test it? You know, how do you verify it? How do you time it? You know, sometimes, you know, doing crazy things like just killing the process. Is actually worthwhile.
We run more than a few servers with a 24-hour enforced lag.
Yeah.
Human error.
Okay. Here's a good discussion. Okay. In 5.6, there is a concept called delayed replication, and you just talk about you've got replication on a server on purpose running behind, so that if some human deletes data, and when I say human, you're probably not talking about an application. About a DBA. Yes. Okay. They go delete the data and you go, oh, I have a save of 24 hours long so I can recover it. But how do you actually recover part of your data, like one table, and merge that with the rest of the other associated tables when you're trying to work on a current system? Do you roll the whole database back or do you just report one thing? So all I can say is that people go, I want to have delayed replication. and I go, why? And they go, well, in case I make a mistake. And I go, well, all it's going to do is it's going to show you the data that you had before you made the mistake. It may be very difficult, if not impossible, to actually put the data back into the system. So you always need to know the reason why and try it.
No.
But, you know, if you don't have backups in place, then you don't know how to get the data back. So, you know, even experts make a mistake. I made a mistake the other day of not using MySQL dump correctly and forgetting to do the --- routines on an Amazon instance before I shut it down. And I didn't get the stored procedure. Just one that they had that they didn't tell me about. So, accidents happen. So, a backup and recovery is really important. I did four backups of this database over a week, and I still made a mistake. And I recovered it, and I set up a new instance, and I stored a backup, and I pointed the staging environment to it, did all these things, and I still made a mistake of not backing up everything. So accidents happen, even from people who claim they know what they're doing.
Is that what you were talking about before? We use MySQL dump a lot.
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about? The comment you made earlier about the error that we rely on. We tested it, but we rely on it.
Yes. I mean, MySQL dump is fine if your database is very small. If your database is sort of, I like to say 5 gig, but let's say up to like 20 gig, MySQL dump would work okay. MySQL dump will work fine on hundreds of gigabytes of database to back it up. The problem is you can never restore it in time. Backup is a two-part process. It's making a copy and then it's recovering from that copy. And MySQL dump, the issue is that as database grows, it takes longer to recover. And that becomes an incremental thing. And the thing is, another thing, routines, stored procedures, and triggers aren't included by default in MySQL dump. So, you have to be aware of that. Is a catch. Definitely.
And just even if you create the database itself, I don't think it's by default.
No, it is. People do MySQL dump and they think about database and all databases. You might be talking about the MySQL schema and not getting those tables and the permissions of the users?
No, just the databases.
Okay. Oh, the databases. Yes. The create database won't exist.
Create table, but not create database.
Yeah. Well, what you can do is you can specify, if you specify all databases, then you'll actually get create tables. Create databases. I would also suggest if you use MySQL dump, you should always dump the schema and the data in two different files. Because sometimes you want to restore the schema and just restore one table. It's much easier than if they're different things to work with. So you should always do a MySQL dump with no data and then the second one with no create info and put the data in the schema in two files. It certainly helps when you want to break the thing up and try to do parallel recover and all sorts of things. Just a little small tip. It's also good for a testing environment. Cool. No questions? That's it. Yes. So solid state drives are a new phenomenon. Fusion.io or Viridit now has cards that can have massive performance improvements and can help with disk IO. MySQL can't handle SSDs. It can't write to them fast enough. Pocona has lots of patches for that and they're doing work on doing it. But you put SSDs in place, then it's going to give you lightning fast performance and address a lot of disk IO problems within the confines of the size and what your operations are, but you won't max them out. In fact, I found people will actually try to create two instances to write to the SSDs now because they're better. I don't have a production customer that's using them. I'm talking to someone next month, we're going to be discussing that. People do use it, depending on what you want to do, whether you want to do it for part of the data, whether it be the data or the log files, you want to do it on the slaves or the master, there's all these sort of permutations. MySQL cannot take full advantage of them, but there are some issues, particularly with flushing adjacent pages and a couple other settings that you want to turn off with SSDs. And Pocona has definitely some good benchmarks information on that. And that's an example where I would say use a Pocona binary, because they really have some tweaks to make writing SSD more efficient. Or more to the point, don't write something that you shouldn't write, because direct writing is so fast, you don't have to worry about what they call flush member neighbor pages. There are pages close to me, I want to flush that one page. Guess what? Well, a page is 16K, then give me bit more. It's much more efficient just to write it all. And then so those are things with SSDs you want to turn off because it's just writing to the disk and just narrowing its lifespan.
What about like some plugins, storage plugins that are designed specifically for SSD?
Yeah, I mean, there was a storage engine called PVXT, which was a good example of a transactional storage engine which was log-based. What that means is it always wrote data sequentially. So SSD was a really good fit for that, but that sort of became defunct. I don't know of anything else. There's another one called, they got a lot of money. It's not called ScaleDB. There's something else, but again, it's a storage engine which is designed not even for data, but data indexes, which is always sequential write. There's never any random write, so therefore, much more efficient writing a disk. But you know, you don't need that for SSDs. SSDs are so fast that it can handle doing the random I.O. reasonably well. But it is fun technology, I just don't have enough. I either have customers that want to try it, but I only spend, you know, 2 or 3 days every 6 months or a year with them, and I don't get a chance to play with it. Or there are other people that don't need it, so or don't want to spend it, they have trouble justifying spending money. Then customers are always happy when they do. It's just much money. Yes?
Did you say that the transition from 5.1 to 5.5 entailed a change in the default schema from MyISAM to...
Yes, I didn't put that in the slides, yes. But so the default storage engine changes. So if you have an application, this is actually a good point. If you have an application which is like an open source product and they have create table and they didn't put engine equals MyISAM in it, then now it will be INODB, and those applications are probably still going to work because they never used transactions in the first place, but you should just be aware of it, particularly if you're upgrading something, you know, you just might, you're installing something in pre-5.5 and 5.5 might give you different results. So yes.
Like a full text index.
Well, I mean, actually that's a good point. If you just assumed that a full text index would get created and didn't specify my item, then that would fail. So yeah. It's definitely changed for the better, but there are some legacy things. I mean, if you're using MySQL, MyISAM in 5.1, you can upgrade to 5.5 and still use MyISAM, it's fine. It's just that if you do create table without specifying an engine, then you get a bit of a
change. I think you mentioned in the course of your primary presentation that you thought in most circumstances it's advisable to be using INODB anyway.
Yeah, I would.
There are some exceptions. I'm curious if you can elaborate on them.
Well,
indexing might be one.
Well, yes and no. There are some differences. My recommendation is to always write your code to support transactions. Whether you use transactions, different problem, but a transactional storage engine gives you a number of benefits over MyISAM. One of them is automatic recovery. One of them is better versioning. So those things are important. Wow, you know, I didn't get a chance to finish my beer. Good point. It's not cold anymore. When do you use MyISAM? Well, MyISAM has a smaller disk footprint. It's less disk I.O. So if you're doing a lot of excessive writing, like of sequential data, and you're not as concerned about the recoverability of it, then you may consider MyISAM. Running in virtualization, you may find that INODB just does too much stuff and it just can't handle it. MyISAM is a little less lightweight. Full text search is an example. I have a customer I was working on today where they're doing, you know, title like percent, word percent, or description like percent, word percent, and I go, that's just not going to get any better no matter how big your database gets. I don't recommend using full text because there's a finite time for it to work, then it stops working because it just doesn't scale. So if you're serious, you would use a full text product, but as a stopgap, you might get away with it. GIS only works, well, GIS, or the R-tree indexes only work in MyISAM. You can do GIS data types in INODB. It's a good product. It's just not production. Reliability. It's more the redundancy of it. The fact that you can get corruption, the fact that we won't go through an automatic recovery. You know. The fact that when the system does crash automatically, you have to manually do things and that grows in time as your data grows. They're all impacts. But it's less disk footprint, it's smaller disk, it's less disk I/O because there's no rollback requirements. So
it's potentially faster.
It is potentially faster. Yeah, I mean, if read intensive is not going to, it's not necessarily going to make any faster reads. It's good if you're doing like really, if you're doing like sequential writes, and if you can like separate out that data into like a different instance for my ISAM, because then you change your backup and recovery strategy, you can get blistering performance in terms of running in my ISAM. You can also get really good performance with NODB as well, almost just as much. And even in reading the sort of pros and cons about, you know, NODB can be better. The two key differences is that they have different configurations, so people never configure them properly. Last week I did something where it's Ruby, it's Engine Yard, it's Ruby on Rails, so that it automatically gave all the memory to NODB and none to my ISAM. The database was all my ISAM, not NODB, so you don't configure it right, you know, you're not utilizing the RAM properly. The other thing is that, I was going to say something in terms of related to that, and it slipped my mind.
Reads
and writes. The issue is that NODB puts all its data in one buffer pool. My ISAM only puts the indexes in the key buffer, not the data. So you have to make sure you're aware of that, and the operating system has to okay for that pool. So again, it's defining those configuration variables, very key. I want to wrap up. So if people do want to leave, feel free to leave. But we're having a chat more. I'll just close it off there. We can stick around. We can have more discussions or talk about any particular situations.